it's important just to review the Rashbam from last week. Remember that whenever he mentioned that I'm going to give a pshat that will fly in the face of Rashi and Chazal, he always mentioned that this is just pshat. There are 69 other ways to read this pasuk. And I'm just trying to tell you, in mikra yotzei midei pshuto, don't forget the pshat. Rashbam on a number of occasions points out that the main way of approaching the psukim of the Torah is through the Yudgin HaMidos of Rabbi Yishmael, the Lamed Beis Midos of Rabbi Eliezer ben Osh, Rabbi Yosef Lili. Don't forget pshat. The Ramban proves this through the Lashon of... He always mentioned that this is just pshat. There are 69 other ways to read this pasuk. And I'm just trying to tell you, in mikra yotzei midei pshuto, don't forget the pshat. Rashbam on a number of occasions points out that the main way of approaching the psukim of the Torah is through the Yudgin HaMidos of Rabbi Yishmael, the Lamed Beis Midos of Rabbi Eliezer ben Osh, Rabbi Yosef Lili. Don't forget pshat. The Ramban proves this through the Lashon of the Maimer itself. In Mikra Yotzei Midei Pshuto wants to tell you what? What does it want to tell you? What does it mean?
That the Rashi is valid, and then the speaker. While learning the drash, you shouldn't forget the
Torah. Right. The Ramban says this in his introduction to the Torah. It's not in mikra ela kipshuto, or hamikra tzorech leforish kipshuto. In mikra yotzei midei pshuto. Don't forget that there is also a pshat. Because until Rashi, most of the Mefarshim forgot that. As 2,500 pages of Gemara, the Maimer only appears three times. Twice in Yevamos and once in the Sechah Shabbos. Let's see what Ibn Ezra does with this. Okay? We'll find that he is more quotes from than Rashbam. Right? So that when Ibn Ezra quotes a perush that goes against the Gemara, usually the approach of the Mefarshim on Ibn Ezra is that it's not because he purposely went against the Gemara, it's because he didn't know the Gemara. Okay? So Ibn Ezra and Rashbam were very different than that. Rashbam was well known as a Talmudist and a Halachist before he was known as a commentary to the Torah, unlike Ibn Ezra. We have no idea what Ibn Ezra knew about Shas, except for Tshuvas of Achronim, of Rishonim. One of the most famous is the Tashbates. In the Tshuvas, someone asked him if he's allowed to go to the doctor. He quoted from Gemaras that you must go to a doctor if you're not feeling well, etc. You have to try as much as you can to improve your health. And he said, and pay no attention to what Ibn Ezra writes in his Perush on the Torah, that where he says that you're not allowed, you should not allowed to go to a doctor for an internal injury, for something that's the only way you're allowed to go to a doctor, Ibn Ezra writes in this week's Parsha, is if you're struck by someone else. Rak shifto yitain v'rapoi rapei only applies, as the Pasuk says, if someone hits you. But if you're suffering with chest pains or something like that, Ibn Ezra writes in the Perush, you're not allowed to go to the doctor, which is a misreading of the Gemara and Baba Kama. So the Tashbates there questions how well Ibn Ezra knew Gemaras. In any event, the Chasam Sofer maintained that Ibn Ezra was a Navi in a tshuva about Zmiras, on the tshuva, one of the most beautiful of all Zmiras, Tzama Nafshi Lelokim, which is written by Ibn Ezra. On that, the Chasam Sofer says that this could have only been written by a Navi. Ibn Ezra, although a great Titan, and I'm not only doing his Perush Al HaTorah here, in his Perush to Koheles, Perek Hay, take a look at any Mikros Gedolos, it's all I have is one pasuk on the whole page is Ibn Ezra. He goes on a tirade against Piyut. He was so much against davening with Piyut, and you know, at the time of Ibn Ezra, there was Piyut every Shabbos. I don't know what to do in this shul, but in my shul, we're about to start a Dalat Parshias, and it's I don't like it. But we have one of those old shuls where they do all the piyutim, and it takes a half hour in Shacharis and Pasha Shkolim, and Musaf too. Ibn Ezra was so much against it. Rashi sort of set the trend that we should only do piyut on special Shabbosim. But at that time, it was common that they said piyutim every single Shabbos. Ibn Ezra was against it, even though he himself wrote piyut. Okay, let's start with. First, just maybe a few words on the personal life of Ibn Ezra. We don't really know where he was born or the year he was born. The year that's very commonly given is 1089 or 1085. He lived at the very end of Rashi's life. He traveled Europe. He was a very poor man. He made a living writing poetry and writing commentaries, and he just lived off of a gvir in any particular town. He went to, I brought these two books that give just beautiful stories of his life. I mean, there's no Hasidic sefer that can compare with hundreds of stories of Ibn Ezra's life that I have in these two books, if you want to see what they are. I have a few poems of his that where he writes about himself. Listen to what he writes here. Galgalu mazalot ma'amadam natuba mahalacham lemolati. Lu yihiyu neirot tzichorati lo ye'esok shemesh ad moti. If I would sell candles, the sun would never set. Lu ehyeh socher betachrichin lo yigbu'un ishim b'chol yomai. If I would sell burial shrouds, no one would ever die. So Ibn Ezra was, he knew, realized that there's a sefer, a contemporary word called Ma'aseh Eifod, where he writes about various Rishonim, and he said it's said about Ibn Ezra that he never had two putim in his pocket at the same time.
Is that a problem with his son? That he did a lot of traveling, that's why he did traveling to get his son?
Right, and his son, he left his son behind in Bovel, and there are stories told here that his son didn't want to follow his way of life, of traveling, and he finally left him off in Bovel.
Well, I heard that he took the son around the way to send the kid on a trip to get away from it, because the son was having problems of his own. You didn't hear that?
No, I don't know. I'll show him afterwards, but just Sichot Agadot Am Al Ibn Ezra. Yeah, okay. By all means, these are not the main books on not much has been written on Ibn Ezra to tell the truth. The two main stories are the Yehuda Krinsky on Ibn Ezra and the Mossad Rav Kook on the Yehuda Krinsky is a far superior sefer. His diktuk, very quickly, differed greatly from Rashi's, in that Rashi relied on Saruk and Dunash ibn Labrat for his diktuk. Ibn Ezra, who could read Arabic, relied on Chiyuj and Janat, and Ibn Ezra's grammar, therefore, was far superior to Rashi's. In general, when Rashi and Ibn Ezra argue on a grammatical point, one has to pay attention to what Rashi says, because he's Rashi. But in general, Ibn Ezra had certainly the upper ground on Rashi when it came to the three-letter vowel system that Rashi didn't even know about. Rashi often claims that a word has one letter to the Shoresh. That Rashi very often points out. The source of the word lahakot is chaf in Rashi, in a few places. So Ibn Ezra knew the three-letter source system. Okay, let's go right into this opening statement, the Safa Berura. Not too many people are aware of this book. It's a book on grammar and stylistics that Ibn Ezra wrote, and I took this portion of his introduction because he refers to Rashi and Chazal in general. Let's take a look at the third line. Atabani. Everyone following with me, I'm on the fourth line now. Pershu parshiot gam psukim levadam gam milot gam otiyot al derech drash. Gam b'mishnah, gam b'tamud u'b'braitot. Ve'ein safet shehen yod'u ha-derech ha-yisharot asher hi. What does that sound like? Hashbam mentioned a few portions last time. Alkein amru klal, ein mikro yotem midei pshuto. V'hadrash hu tosefet ta'am. Ibn Ezra here is saying that Ein Mikra Yotzei Pshuto is the Ikra, and the Drash is the Sefer Ta'am. Rashbam said before that the Drash is the Ikra, and I'm going to give Pshat on top of that. The Hadarot HaBa'im, Samu Kol Drash Ikar. Okay, and we have put too much emphasis on Drash, Kol Ikar V'Shoresh, the root of our study. Kirav Shlomo Zal, that's Rashi, Shepiresh HaTanach Aldat Drash V'hu Choshev Kihu Aldat Pshat. Rashi thinks he's giving Pshat. The Ein, now this is the famous quote, the Ein Bisfor Pshat Rak Echad Mini Elef. In his book, he gives Pshat only one every thousand times.
Okay. This is the Rashbam writing?
No, it is. Sefer Berura. Okay. V'chachmei Dereini Yithalolu Be'ila HaSfarim. Our rabbis love those books. He doesn't say why, but that's the pshat. And let me tell you, Ibn Ezra, that's the way it's been for the last 900 years. No one worked on you. There are some mefarshim on Ibn Ezra. But why don't you have Ibn Ezra here in your library? You don't have it. You have Ramban, you have Sfarim, you have Skuni, you have everyone, but you don't have Ibn Ezra. I have to look in the Mikros Gedolos in this library for Ibn Ezra. You don't have it in my library either. It's very difficult to get. But Rashi, who doesn't have a Rashi? Who doesn't have a Berlin or a Chevelle of Rashi? So I'm not talking about Mikros Gedolos, I'm talking about the scientific editions. So Ibn Ezra in Echinami, it's been that way until now. Okay. Now he gives you a mashal. He says, "V'yinei atein lecha mashal." He gives you a Gemara in it's Bavas in Yishnochlin, where the Gemara darshins far out of the pshat of the pasuk. The pshat of the pasuk, I didn't give it here because it's just going to take us too long to work on that, implies clearly that when a man dies and has no one to inherit him, his wife inherits him. So he has no brothers, in Parshas Pinchas with the Benos Tzlokha, that his wife should inherit him if he has no daughters either. So it says, whoever, if he has no one, let She'ero HaKarov, his closest relative inherit him, who is obviously his wife. Ibn Ezra writes in his parish there. However, he says that if you look just at the bottom, V'zesha amru avosenu emesu. But the Gemara, really, the Gemara asks a question on itself. The Gemara twists the pasuk to teach that a woman doesn't inherit her husband. A man inherits his wife, but a woman doesn't inherit her husband. And even though the pasuk seems to indicate just that, that the woman inherits from her husband. Look up, Ramitvah Chavzayin Pasuk Gedalot, take a note of that, and you tell me how you read from that pasuk that a woman doesn't inherit her husband. Yet that's how the Gemara darshins that Ibn Ezra writes, Ki Kabbalah Haita Biyadam. Remember those words, Kabbalah Haita Biyadam. Because Ibn Ezra mentions that. If you read any 10 psukim straight in Ibn Ezra, he'll question, he'll say, this is what the Gemara says, in Kabbalah hi nikabel. If it's in Halacha, Ibn Ezra is aware of it, he'll say, Emesi, Kabbalah. He's not going to do it like what Rashbam does. But if it's Nagadata, he'll say, who said that Avram went in the Kishon HaEish? Who said Yocheved was 130 when she gave birth to Moshe? In Kabbalah nikabel. I have enough trouble explaining to the Muslims, he writes, how 55 men can become 600,000 in just 200 years, right? On top of that, I have to explain to them that 1 in 500 died during Makas Choshech. The Medrash says 1 in 5, 1 in 50, 1 in 500. So I don't accept these Midrashim. Do you know the source of the Medrash that 1 in 5 or 50 or 500 died? V'chamushim alu bnei Yisrael. Okay, so Ibn Ezra, on that pasuk, right, so I have this in here. So we get all this in Ibn Ezra's parish, and at the end he always writes, V'im Kabbalah nikabel, ulai yish sod v'drash zu. Right, so this is one of the hallmarks of Ibn Ezra. Okay, so in the notes you have at the bottom on the Mevim Safa, you can take a look at some of the notes.
Rashi there says,
Ein
kumash elo.
Okay, let's talk now about authorship for a moment. This has very much to do with Rashi, because Rashi was very much on the other side. But any discussion on Ibn Ezra's parish must discuss authorship, because he is the considered, by the way, in the Anchor Bible, biblical criticism. He's called the grandfather of biblical criticism. The father of biblical criticism is Spinoza. And without the work of Ibn Ezra, Spinoza could never have done what in his questions of Torah Misina, Spinoza never could have done these without Ibn Ezra's parish. So what's the pshat? I'll try to do this as quickly as possible. We know of a Gemara where there's a machlokis between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon over the last eight psukim of the Torah. So one shita is that Moshe Bedema kasav, another shita is Yahushua kasav. He wrote those at last eight psukim. So Ibn Ezra tacks on to that. If you look on page 2, it says Vaya'al Moshe. Vaya'al Moshe. The only page that you have to read, I have a few more of these. Okay. Lefida atiki mizeha pasuk katav Yahushua. My opinion that it's not the last eight psukim of the Torah, it starts in Pasuk Aleph. How many psukim are in the last parak of Torah? There's four more, so there's 12 altogether. That's become important. Let's see why. In my opinion, all these psukim, ki achar shalom Moshe lo katav. After Moshe went up, no one knows where he's buried. How did he bring these things down? Alright? By the way, just from the point of the Gemara, the one who objects to Moshe writing those last eight psukim writes, Efshar Moshe Chai, Efshar Moshe Meis, because say Vayomas Moshe, how could a dead man write? But Bach changes the girsa to Efshar Moshe Chai, the Posei Peramis Moshe, which is really the question. If Moshe was alive and wrote that Moshe died, the Marsha points out that the changed girsa of the Bach means that it's like a lie. It's Mechzik Hashikra. Moshe's writing a lie. He says, Moshe, Moshe's alive. So that's really the objection of Rabbi Yehuda to saying that that Moshe couldn't write these eight. So Ibn Ezra tacks on another objection. How could Moshe have written Vayal Moshe, for that matter? Who brought it down? Now look at his parish to the beginning of Devarim. On the Divra Maschil, Be'ever Hayardain. Be'ever Hayardain, he writes, V'im Tavin Sod, you see it's at the top of the page, the left side. Top of the page, left side. See it? I have the words Sod Shnei Masar right above where I'm about to read. Okay, you see that? V'im Tavin Sod HaShnei Masar. If you understand the secret of the 12, what would you say is the secret of the 12? It's not 8 psukim at the end of the Torah, it's 12. Once you accept that that's true, that it's not just, I'm reading at the left-hand side of the page, top of the page, right under where I wrote Sod Shnei Masar.
What's the source?
This is Ibn Ezra on Devarim Aleph Aleph. I have it written on the side. If you accept this secret of the 12, Gam vayichtov Moshe, v'haknan yod v'oretz, v'har Hashem yira'eh, v'hinei arso eres barzel, takir ha'emes. If you understand the secret of the 12, then he tells you four of the psukim, and if you know these four psukim, you will accept the truth.
How would you want the shirk? It says v'haknan yod v'oretz, which means Moshe couldn't have written it.
Okay, we'll just say that it is... There are Perushim Tiben Ezra that discuss the nature of these four psukim. It's Sofnas Paneach is the one I will take. What's wrong with these four psukim? Haknani Od Ba'aretz had to have been said by someone who lived at a time where there were no longer Knanim Ba'aretz. B'hinei Arsoer is Barzel, Moshe was Beferish told not to go near B'nei Amon. How does he know this? B'har Hashem Yira'eh, I believe the most difficult of all four. No one anywhere in the Torah knew that this is going to be the spot where Hashem is going to, the Makom Asher Yivchar Adarav. Hashem refers to this place 17 times in Devarim and never tells us where it is. You mean we knew already in Bereishis? Asher Yomer Hayom? Hayom means we're going Aliyah L'Regel here, today. You following? It says today people are saying God comes to this mountain. It's true, Haram Moriah is where Shlomo built the Beis HaMikdash. It says when he built the Beis HaMikdash in Devarim, he went to Haram Eretz HaMoriah. So I understand that that's the place where Hashem is going to see us, but no one at the time of the Torah knew this. So that's the third one. And the other one, Vayichtov Moshe, how can it be a pasuk in the Torah? And Moshe wrote this Torah. So this had all four psukim. This is how the Tzofnas Paneach, Rabbi Yosef Tuv Elim of Bonnefeld, famous Rishon, quoted by other Rishonim, accepts this chat in Ibn Ezra, and he writes at the end, Mali David, Mali Shlomo, Mali Moshe, Kivin Shenitna Mis, doesn't say Sinai Min Hashamayim. What do I care if it's Moshe or not? You've got to be careful with those words, all right? That's been questioned by many, but it's said by Arishon, that's the Pshat Ibn Ezra. The Karnei Or, Krinsky, Yehuda Krinsky, who in a very long treatise, and he quotes Spinoza there, he says that this is a forgery. It couldn't be Ibn Ezra. Why? Because in his parish, listen to this pasuk, Ve'ela ha-melachim asher melchu be'eretz Edom, lifnei melach melach al... Israel. What pasuk more than this couldn't have been written by Moshe? These are kings who ruled in Edom before king ruled in Israel. This pasuk had to have been inserted after Shaul. Right? So, okay, well, that's Ibn Ezra's solution. Right? But if Ibn Ezra found a problem with these, surely he should have found a problem with that. And you know what he says on that pasuk? I should have put it in here. He says, some people say that this pasuk was written, he quotes the person who says it, Yitzchaki, it's not Rashi, a Karaite, by the name of Yitzchaki. He says, it is Yitzchaki who says that this pasuk was written in the time of the Malachim. Now I know why his name is Yitzchak, Kalachikarashmo Yitzchak, Kalashameh Dvorak, Tzochekalav. Of course, he makes fun of him and his mother and everyone else who's related to him. And then he says, the pshat is that the Melech is Moshe, but he be sure Melech. These are the kings who ruled Nedom before Moshe ruled as king. Pshat, but it fits. If Ibn Ezra would write that in Bereishis, that can't be the same Ibn Ezra who wrote this in Devarim. And as I'll show you later, his parish to Bereishis and Devarim are the same parish. His parish to Shmos and the other four books are as if though they're written by two different people. I'll show you why later. This is basically the theme of the Sot Shnei Masor. You have some on one side that say it's a forgery, some on another side that say it's Sofnas Paneach, who says it's Ibn Ezra. All indications point to the fact that Ibn Ezra did say these things. But this is Ibn Ezra. Maybe we're not understanding it properly. First of all, it is here in the beginning of Devarim for a reason. You will understand the truth.
What truth?
Ibn Ezra didn't write these things for the masses. He writes riddles all the time, sure.
Yeah. And Parshas Kedoshim. Just what's the meaning? If you understand this, what will you
then know? Then you'll know that there are psukim in the Torah not written by Moshe.
Is that the way they
translate it? That's how Sofnas Paneach understands that. No question. That's how Yosef Tivalm understands it. Now, let's get back this is a Shitas Yachid in the Rishonim for sure, but if that's the Pshat in Ibn Ezra, then that's the, the Rambam was very much against such a Shita in the Mishnah Torah and in the Monavuchim, yet the Rambam, in his famous letter that he wrote to his son Abraham, that he said, if you want to know the Emes of Torah, study Ibn Ezra. Then later they've been proven that this was a forgery. It's not really the Rambam's handwriting. It was written by Ibn Ezra's students. So the point here, where we stand now, is that Ibn Ezra was willing to go out on a limb on biblical authorship. So I think that the reason why I say that internal evidence to Ibn Ezra points to the fact that he wrote these words is because in these other four psukim in the Torah, he writes, look what I wrote in the beginning of Devarim about this pasuk.
It's actually similar to this in Shlos, where Moshe, the power wants them to do the Kabbalah and the Torah, and he uses Moshe's standing point of the power, and he uses the words Torah Mitzrayim. So it would seem from Rashi that Torah Mitzrayim was not what Moshe really said.
It's so
like
one of the parentheses.
He wouldn't talk to the king of Egypt, calling his god Torah Mitzrayim. So it seems that. This reminds me of that Rashi.
Let me point to a quick difference, and I'll show you another difference. There's a difference between what Moshe might have said or meant, but that's only one parish in Rashi, and a difference between what God told Moshe to write in the Torah. Let me just give a quick, just take a minute. In the tshuva by Yehudas Moshe on whether or not you're allowed to refer to your Rebbe by his name, to his face, the Shach concludes that you're not allowed to. And he proves from a Gemara in Sanhedrin, by Rashi, and at the end of Sanhedrin, that when you refer to your Rebbe, you always have to refer in third person. So the Torah Tzmimeh asks a kasha on the Shach, and he says, well, it says, Adoni Moshe Kloim. Yeshua addressed Moshe by his name. So the Torah Tzmimeh gives his teretz. He says that it's inconceivable that Yeshua meant to strike at Moshe's kavod. He was coming to protect Moshe's kavod from Eldad and Medad there. But Moshe in the Tshuva, please take a look at here. Odeya Aleph Simikuf Lam Gimel, he writes, maybe Moshe really didn't say these words and Ruach HaKodesh told him to write them down. I don't know what that means. But that, take a look.
Yeshua didn't say
these words. I'm sorry, maybe Yeshua didn't say Adoni Moshe Kla'im, but Ruach HaKodesh called Moshe right then. Take a look, please, I don't want to go any further, but there's a difference between what might have been said. When Moshe and Hashem spoke at the burning bush, I'm sure many things were said that aren't in the Torah, that were changed, that Hashem told Moshe at some point, you put this down. Enough said. So I have to differentiate, I think, between those two. So one last thing. Why is this Perush in the beginning of Devarim? Why did he call together four psukim in the beginning of Devarim? The answer is because the Eiver HaYardain. Tell me something, did Moshe ever cross the Yardain?
No.
Okay. This is the Yardain, right? This is Israel? This is also Israel, right? Anyway, so this is the Yardain, this is Israel, this is the other side of the Yardain, right? This is called Eiver HaYardain. Did Moshe ever cross this in his life?
No.
No, everyone agreed with you. So which side of the Yardain was Devarim set on? All the Sefer Devarim is said here, right?
Yeah.
So how can the beginning of Sefer Devarim say, these are the words that Moshe spoke, the Eiver HaYardain? That means the beginning of Sefer Devarim had to have been written here. What does Eiver HaYardain mean? The other side of the Yardain. These are the words that Moshe spoke on the other side of the Yardain. So Tzafnas Paneach says, you know what Ibn Ezra really means? He means that there are eight, four, another four, and another five. Because the first five psukim in Devarim also couldn't have been written by Moshe. Because it says, Be'ever HaYadim. Think it over carefully, okay? Be'ever HaYadim means the other side of the Yadim. The pasuk says, these are the words that Moshe said on the other side of the Yadim. Right?
Well, it's been a while. Yeah, right. It's been a while. It's been a while. It's been a while. It's been a while.
Right. This is being written. These first, very small of it is what the rest of the Sefer was saying. What I'm writing now, I'm now in Israel writing. These are the words that Moshe said on the other side of the Yarden. Okay. Now, Chizkuni and other Rishonim say, no, every Yarden always refers to this side, no matter where you're talking. All right. So that proves it throughout the Psukim and even in Nach, and fine. I just want to point out that this thing does exist in Perish Ibn Ezra. The majority of the Rishonim disagreed, but you have to know. When you know about Ibn Ezra, you have to know this thing. That's all. All right, and all this appears in Tzavkas Paneach. Okay. So that's just on authorship. I think that Rav Moshe Zalman, there are two tshuvas. Have you remember these tshuvas about if Dr. Lyman was here, he would bring in all the books that have all the other things about it. I have them at home also, but there's a man who wrote a parish to Rabbi Yehuda Chassid on the Torah where Yitzchak Langer, by the Shiras HaBe'er, and he wrote that originally the Shiras HaBe'er was Halal HaGadol, and David liked it so much that he took it out of Tehillim, and he took it out of the Torah and put it into Tehillim. Now that's really getting dangerous, because that sounds a little like you're violating what's written in Sanhedrin Batzad of Tess about Bar Hashem Bazaar and then Torah Messina. That's more dangerous than Ibn Ezra. So when this person finished his book on Rabbi Al-Chassid, he went on vacation to Switzerland, and he had his manuscript in his hand. It was already on print. 500 were printed. He showed it to the chief rabbi, David Levy, in Switzerland, and he said, stop printing this book. Can't print this. And he showed four reasons why. The other three have to do with other issues. This one is a Tanakh issue. He says that it's impossible that Rabbi Yehuda Chassid said this, and I'm going to write a letter to Rabbi Moshe Feinstein if you don't stop printing. So it's already in the printer. You write him a letter. We'll see what he says. Moshe went on a limb against this. He says, Rabbi Moshe answered, I'm not feeling well, but I have to answer this today. I have to, and he never refers to Yitzchak Langer, who was a Frum Jew by name. He always calls him Plony. And he really, really stuck it into him. And he shows that Rav Moshe, it's a good source for all the Kfir Dika sources in Chazal. And he takes the issue with Avot Rabbi Nosson, a Sifrei, and Balosman, a Sifrei at the end of the Torah, where he says all of these sources are wrong. They have to be taken out and have to be censored. I, in each one of them, the Vilna Gaon commented on them. That they have to throw that out also, apparently. And I don't mean to, you know, I'll explain why Rav Moshe wrote these truths. It's from the last year of this, in the Kufi Dal, the Kufi Tesbot. And then the Lyman, the one who wrote him the letter that made him write the next Truvim. But it was a few people wrote the letter and said, wait, there are many books that are quoting this Perush, that not only Rabbi Dachosid, but this Perush of Rabbi Dachosid. And they said, Rabbi Dachosid said this and this and this. Rav Moshe is on a Truva to burn that book too. And that's a mistake, because that book is the Menachem Tzioni, which the Chidor writes is Pilik Loim Chidushe Chidushe. And an Achron has a Truva that you have to burn it. So that, I think that Rav Moshe, I don't think Rav Moshe wrote this Truva. I think it's student who wrote the Truva. But in what Yitzchak Langer did was he stopped the press. And I don't have it here, but I'll show you that in Dr. Lyman has one of the 500. I don't have that, but he has all these books. But in the one that I have, you can see that in certain places of the book, a page was ripped out and another page was put in. Because he took out these four objectionable places. And you look at it. The one that I'm talking about is on just exactly Shira Teva Air, and it doesn't say the objectionable portion. So anyway, so Rav Moshe went on a limb, I think, that he considered the Harar Shah, because people are calling Ibn Ezra the grandfather of biblical criticism. He's aware of that. So in the second Shuvah, he talks about Ibn Ezra. So if you want to see a tshuva that deals, an Achron that deals with this whole issue of authorship in Ibn Ezra, take a look at Yerodeah, the last Yerodeah, I think, Shelah Gimel, in Igros Moshe, Simon Kuf Tesfah. And he talks about this thing, and he mentions the Eilam Lachim, Hashem Al-Kuber, Tezom Mosa. Okay, let's move on now to Ibn Ezra and the Kabbalot of Chazal. Can I ask now, how many weeks is this supposed to be?
There's
4 weeks. Okay, so I only have Ibn Ezra and Ramban to do. So we'll do Ibn Ezra today. We won't finish it today. We'll finish Ibn Ezra next week. And maybe if we have time to touch on the Ramban, and we'll have Ramban for the 4th week. That's okay. So I don't have to be pressured to finish this. Okay, the first drash that I'd like to deal with in Ibn Ezra is... is Kabbalos of Chazal. And I'd like to deal with one, the five, the one in five or 50 or 500. Why does he insist that he can't accept such a medrash? Look what he writes, the third line. The drash she'alu echad mechamesh me'ot. See the third line, the middle of the line after Yoshua al-Kidal. And the drash, there's only one out of 500 left. Davo yachid hu. Now what does he mean, davo yachid hu? Now when I did midrashic literature here, I think this was last spring. Do you remember I brought down a Rav Haigaon, a Meiri, a Shmuel Hanogid, a Rambam and Mor Nevuchim, where all four sources said that when it comes to Agadita, one must remember that the Amora or the Tana is not saying what they feel. This is what was at Sinai, and this is what we have to believe. They're saying their impression, their opinion of the pasuk. It made them feel good, and they're not saying that this is exactly what happened historically. Das Yachid means this is my opinion. When Rav and Abaye argued about the halacha, and there was Ibayas Rav of Abaye, this is, they said this is the true emes of how to establish the meaning of this pasuk. But on a drash, Hamushim Alu Bnei Yisrael Meretz Mitzrayim, everyone knows what the meaning of that pasuk is. But Derech Drash, I'll tell you something else that and there's so much more on top of it. Drash has so much more to teach than just the plain meaning. Alright, and so you ask me, historically speaking, the Drash and the Pshat cannot both be accepted, right? Either one in five or 50 or 500 died, or they didn't. Wouldn't you expect that such an event, I mean, one in 500, what's 500 times 600,000? I mean, that's outrageous. That so many people died in how can such a thing happen? Right, so yeah, 30 million about? 300 million, something like that, yeah. So that so many people died. Well, I don't think there were 300 million people in the world at that time. So anyway, that's just a question that Ibn Ezra, I'm sure, dealt with. But listen to how he expressed it. Allah machlokes, but enenu kabolu klal. Remember that word? What he said in halacha? The pasuk seems to indicate that women inherit their husbands, but the Gemara says no. It means men inherit their wives. That's Kabbalah. All right. So I heard that. So it's in a story where the women are inheriting. It's no sprachla that they're inheriting the father. Okay. So he says in El Kabbalah Klal, the Dailanu Hatzar Shaanachnu Boim Chachmi Yishmael, enough tzaros that I live amongst the Arabs. Shehem Amrim Echitachin Mechamishim Bechamishos Becharim Sheyolidu Bemasayim Be'ezer Shanim Sheishmi Ad Elav Becharim Ben Esrim. How is it possible that 55 men should be from that 210 years, 600,000 men? By the way, I don't know, where does Ibn Ezra get that they were 210 years? Because that he accepted as a Kabbalah. There's no pasuk in the Torah that indicates that they were there. Kates mean Hashem said there'll be 400 years, right? Who said that it should be 400 years from the birth of Yitzchak? There's not pasukim anyway, and it says in the 430 years in Bo, in all these. In such a case, Ibn Ezra said, I'm relying on Chazal, and that's that. Right? That's a Kabbalah shenikabel. Ibn Ezra wasn't afraid to accept Kabbalahs, right? Or to make up some of his own, by the way, as we'll see. Alright, so now what he does in the rest of this parish, and please take a look at it, that's enough for us to just mention it, is he goes mathematically to show how 55 families can be 600,000 in 210 years. And he ends up, he says, it's about right. Look, this whole big parish here, it's a math problem. How often the women have to give birth to that 55, and what age are they getting married, and what... Would you bother yourself with this? It says, it may be part of the issue to believe, enough said. But that's Ibn Ezra, because he was such a stickler for this. He says that, Rashi says, how tall Migdal Bavel was. You know what Ibn Ezra says in Bereshit Yilal? He says, I was once climbing a mountain, and the air was so thin there. I can't believe that the tower was so tall, because they wouldn't be able to breathe up there. So Rashi says that Yaakov planted Ateshitim in the desert. Well, I traveled in the desert, and I saw Ateshitim there anyway. So Yaakov didn't have to plant them, they were there. You know, he used a lot of his experience, and in this sefer here, on Ibn Ezra, it gives It gives all of those, this you don't have in Prinsky. This I just, he gives all the places in his parish in one chapter, parish on Tanakh, where he uses his travels as, in his parish. He says, I once went here, I once traveled in the desert, I once went in the mountain, I once traveled to Egypt. That's right, if you look in his Perush Ha'aruch, to Shmos, he says so often, you know, in Egypt this happens very often. In Egypt they find this. This is how they eat in Egypt. And I saw exactly what the priests in Egypt are doing, and that's how I explain this section. He talks about the eating habits, and while everyone, Pe'echad, explains that when Potiphar, when Yosef tells Potiphar's wife, how can I do this to you? Your husband set everything in the house in my charge bill. Here's halechem asher huachel. One of the most of the Mepharshim explain in terms of the bill, the lechem asher huachel.
Private life.
And they bring a raya from Yisro. And Yisro says, kirenu lo v'yochal lechem, let him come and eat bread. And then the euphemism for, let him marry one of you. Ibn Ezra says, because the problem is, how could Potiphar put Yosef in charge of so much and not the food? Of course he's in, but he's always in charge of the food. There's nothing he's in charge of more than the food. Ibn Ezra says, I traveled in Egypt, and I saw that they have such strict codes of dietary codes, much more strict than we have. And I know their ancient rules that lechem is pshat there, and that's why they wouldn't eat with Yosef's brothers. Not because simply they hated Jews, same reason why we won't eat with Goyim. Because they had much stricter kashrus though, they wouldn't eat meat, And that's why Potiphar would never put a Hebrew in charge of his food. And he says this on Tovas Mitzrayim. You referred to that before. On that pasuk, he goes through a lengthy discourse on the dietary laws of Egyptians. So he says this book called together. All if you want to take a look at this, it's called Ibn Ezra. Okay, by a man named David Kahana, written in 1923 in Poland. Okay. Okay, so at the end, after going through this whole cheshbon of how to get to 600,000, he says, so it couldn't have been through 300 million, right? At the end, he says, v'haklal drashu v'ein lismoch alav. He says that we shouldn't be somech on this at all. V'ulay she'amru b'tchila ha'yalo sod. Maybe the one who said 1 in 5, 50 or 500 died, maybe he had some kind of sod to this, I don't know. That's it. That's all he says. Okay. There seems to be some kind of sod that originally there was supposed to be 430 years of slavery. Miriam was 86 when they left Egypt. She was 6 years older than Moshe. And according to Chazal, the slavery started when Miriam was born. That's why her name was Miriam, Mar. So 86 times 5 is 430. So there's something that it was supposed to be for 430 years with more people, so it ended up being 86 years for fewer people. I heard that as some kind of payer for this, but he says there's some soul to it. Whatever it is, there's some explanation. I might not know it, and I don't accept this shot. Okay. By the way, Ibn Ezra was guided by something, and he had it out for something. He didn't care what it means and what I'm chepping with. Let me ask you this question. Moshe turned the water to blood in the first Makkah. Did Jews have to drink? What did they drink for 7 days? Rashi says if a Jew and an Egyptian drinking from the same cup, he's drinking water, he's drinking it, even with straws. So Ibn Ezra says impossible. Jews also had blood. They also had frogs, and they also had lice, and they also had boils, and they also had locusts.
So all they had were the other things they didn't have.
By five of them. It says by Arov, Dever, Vorod, Choshech, and Matas Bechoros that I will separate Israel. The logical implication is that when it says nothing, Israel gets to play both times. Ibn Ezra doesn't tell us why on earth would God want to plague us with five plagues. Doesn't tell us that. I mean, Ibn Ezra complained when the straw was taken away. Imagine what they said when the water turned to blood. Moshe, what are you doing to us? I don't know. Ibn Ezra.
The text very seriously. Yeah. If the text tells you this, they could have told you on everything.
Absolutely. Like last time we saw now I have the Chakira here by Eliezer Magolios. This is in Beit Mikra a few years ago. about the relationship between Ibn Ezra and Rashbam. They both lived at the same time. It's true that Rashbam outlived Ibn Ezra by about 30 years, and Rashbam had a much better life. He was a family of Rabbeinu Tam, a multimillionaire by our standards. Rabbeinu Tam's Pesach and Ribbis and Yayin Netzach made them very rich. But that you can study with Dr. Soloveitchik for. Anyway, Eliezer Margoliath questions the relationship between Rashbam and Ibn Ezra. They're both very much the same kind of style in terms of Adipas Apshat, but they part company in a few areas that we'll yet get to. He proves that Ibn Ezra saw Rashbam's Perush. Rashbam never saw Ibn Ezra's Perush. And that there was, I've still been introduced to you the idea of Ibn Ezra's two Perushim. Ibn Ezra two different Perushim to the Torah. And you can see, just open up in Mikros Gedolos and look at Shmos and look at any place else in the Torah and you can see these are two different people. According to Margoliot, Ibn Ezra in Bereshis, Vayikra, Bamidbar, Devarim did not hear of Rashbam. Ibn Ezra to Shmos heard of Rashbam. And all this will become clear shortly, but they both had the same approach to, like Rashbam said last week, listen, just close your eyes, just, you know, go according to your chush, and if you can accept the Kabbalah, accept the Kabbalah. Alright? Rashbam never makes that claim. Rashbam doesn't say, if it's a Kabbalah, I accept it. Isn't it a Kabbalah that the day starts at night? Rashbam wasn't afraid to say, no, the day starts in the morning. Isn't it a Kabbalah that Avadola Olam means he should be a slave? Adayovel, which is what Ibn Ezra tries with tremendous zeal to prove that Avadola Olam means Adayovel in Pshat, because they part there. Ibn Ezra tries with more difficulty than Rashbam did to try to fit the Kabbalah when he thought that the Kabbalah was worthwhile. Alright? Okay, now next, another questionable agadatha is the nature of Nimrod. Would everyone in here accept that Nimrod was a Rasha? Why? It says Nimrod was a gibor tzayed lifnei Hashem who echil began to show off to show that the gvura of man over animals. Right? Let's read Ibn Ezra. Nimrod. Al terakesh ta'am l'chol Hashemos im lo nechtav. What does that mean?
Nimrod.
Nimrod means let us rebel. Okay. So don't you're making his parents into Nevi'im. Don't look for a terutz and for his name. He was the first to show his might over animals. So, the pshat is that Nimrod was a tzaddik. He was the first establish the idea of offering kabbalos. Big chiddush. Vadrash derech acheres. If not for it didn't continue. They offered it with a one-shot deal. Noah also offered a one-shot deal, but Nimrod offered it constantly. Okay, he began to do it as a rule. All right. So that's Ibn Ezra. You won't find such a thing in other places. Here is where Ibn Ezra and Rashbam part company. Rashbam doesn't bother even to comment on this. Rashbam didn't find the necessity to go la'afuke something a maimer in Chazal on this. But Ibn Ezra says, my eyes see that someone there's a misjustice done to this man. There's a nachtamina l'halacha here. What could possibly be a nachtamina l'halacha of this Ibn Ezra? How can I paskin l'halacha based on this Ibn Ezra? Yeah, someone did that? Can you name a child Nimrod today? Halacha, because it's at the end of the left, beginning of the left parak in service, where you're allowed, in a few other places, where you're allowed to name a child Avshalom. Okay, the Gemara has Avshalom, and Tosfos changes the gears to Avishalom. And he says it's impossible that there's an Amora named Avshalom. I know some people named Avshalom. I don't know if you think of anyone named by that name.
I know people named Adrian.
Adrian. Yishmael is a big chiddush. That's how Yishmael, I heard a wonderful voice on that. I heard a wonderful voice on that, but that's going to be fine. Okay, let's look at the age of Yitzchak at the Akedah. Now this we discussed last week. How old was Yitzchak? Remember we did Rashbam. What would Rashbam tell you to do if you want to say how old was Yitzchak at the Akedah? L'mayim nachtamina there, I guess if you want to make a painting at the Akedah, there's a nachtamina, you should paint it. But there's no real nachtamina how old Yitzchak was. Maybe the nachtamina is how old Rivka was, and then the Lubavitcher Rebbe will tell you a girl should light candles at 3 because Rivka was 3 when she married Yitzchak. But there's a nachtamina. But even though the Dasakanim and the Rashbam all say that she was much older.
Enough to be understanding.
Yeah, absolutely. The way they talk to each other. Absolutely. If Yitzchak is 37 in this story, he's a major character also. But if he's 12, 13, he's in the background, his father's the major character. Sure, they're not familiar. So let's look at Ibn Ezra. Look at the third line, Virazal. So the third line, third word on the line. Virazal amru, Shehaya Yitzchak ka'asher ne'ekad ben 37 shanim. Again in Ibn Ezra, V'im divrei kabbalah nikabel. Now remember those words because you find them so often whenever he refers to a drash. You know, in your readings of Ibn Ezra, you'll find it every psukim where in your reading of Parashat Shavuot with Ibn Ezra, you'll find it 15 times. It's mentioned all the time. Nikabbalah nikabel. And know what it means. I think you can tell now what it means. So usually when he says it, he's saying, I'm not going to accept it. Right? So when he accepts it, that's what he said before, he says, Akal drashu ve'in smoke alav. Let's see, because he's about to contradict this. U'miderech tzvora ein zeh nachon. I don't think it's true. Sheharo ra'ui shetiyeh titkas Yitzchak gluya. If he was 37, then he's the main character. Not Aaron, should have been Velokim Nisa Es Avraham Yitzchak. The Ein B'Katuv Me'uma Al Yitzchak. Nothing in the text about Yitzchak. Rashi reads into the text about Yitzchak, but Ibn Ezra didn't. But Acherim Amru Shehaya Ben Chamesh Shanim. Gam Zeh Lo Yitachen. This he finds in Gaonim. That some say that he was five, but Avoshna Sa'at Seha Olah. It's impossible because it says he was Kehaser. Now get this. Which kind of Rishon is going to say this? He had as much guts as Rishon. Ki Inu Amarlo Ataha Olah Yitochen Sheyivrach. Because had Avram told him the truth, he would have run away. Now in Rashi, as soon as he says, Elohim Yerla Selo Bani, the next time it says, Yechlim Shnei Yachtov, Rashi says, he knew and he went to be the Leva Khan. So, Ibn Ezra says that I don't accept. Ibn Ezra. Rashi says he knew and he went to the labor fund. So Ibn Ezra says that I don't accept. Rashi says he knew and he went to the Levachon. So, Ibn Ezra says that I don't accept.
Any criteria for accepting a
homophone? Ibn Ezra is if it's not written and it's not a halacha, I'm only going to accept it if there's strong textual evidence. That's how Ibn Ezra works.
But you know, he seems to qualify for recommendation of the Levachon.
Right. He only writes Zekabalos, Rechim Lekabel, in halachic portions. And when he doesn't write that, again, he doesn't write that in halachic portions, usually Achronim, the scholars say that that's a sign that he didn't know that it's contradicted to the Gemara.
Well, it's too much of a rationalist. On the third line that you didn't read, he said, the Mashuvah. Why do you say the Nashuva Shalom Yargi Shitzkot Begirra? Right? And what does Rashi say on that? No, the third line of this, remember? Kadesh Shalom Yisuva Shulam, Shuvo, Shalom Yargi Shitzkot Begirra.
Right.
So he looks at it just as a plain rationalist. If you let out the secret, Yitzkot will say, but my neck, goodbye. What does Chazal say? That Chazal say, Nibo, Velo Yarda, Ba Nibo. So Rabbi Yehuda says, that Niba Balayadamim Niba is a Freudian slip. That of course he knew he was going to shack him, but deep down he's a father. And that Chazal understood the psychology of Abraham, that deep down he didn't want to shack his son. He was a normal human being. So that's why he said the Nashuma, because he blurted it out. It was a Freudian slip. Whereas the Ibn Ezra is so connected to the text that he's, you know, see, Chazal understood the psychology, and I think they looked at it. Ibn Ezra is so attached to the wording of the text,
that he's so dry.
That he takes everything away from Yitzchak.
Absolutely.
And Chazal give everything to Yitzchak.
That's
just the opposite.
I'll go a step further. Ramban in me, who understands Rashi, would say that Yitzchak in Bereishis Chaf Beis is Klal Yisrael, who would willingly go to the Shechita rather than become Goyim, rather than take the cross. To Chazal and to Rashi, Yitzchak is a paradigm for the Jewish community. And to say, had they known that this was, they would run away, oi, what are you doing to my story? You're destroying the most important story of our history. Rashbam, by the way, killed this story last week. Remember what Rashbam did with this story? Rashbam said that this was a punishment to Avram for giving up land. He still did something for us about contemporary issues, about giving up land for peace today, But Rashbam really destroyed that in terms of what we used for that story for in terms of Jewish identity and martyrdom. Okay. All right. So next, this one I referred to, the one at the bottom about where did Bnei Israel get the Atzei Shittim in the desert. Okay, I again assume that my hour is up when the tape is up. Is that okay if I just go my hour? I know it's so late. It's very late. Let's do the Atzei Shittim. Rashi said, where did they get Atzei Shittim in the desert? And he answers that Yaakov Avinu saw Baruch HaKodesh, that his sons would leave Egypt and go in this route to go back. They would need Kroshim for the Mishkan, so he planted them for them. All right. Now that is nowhere hinted in the text. Ibn Ezra takes issue with this. Now I'll introduce the Perish Katzar and Perish Aruch. What I'm about to read is in the Perish Katzar. There are different opinions which one was written first. He wrote introductions to both. We have the Perish Katzar to all five books of the Torah. The Perish Katzar to Shmos is not in your Mikros Gedolos. You can find it at the end of the Mosada Rav Kook edition, the three-volume edition, or at the end of the Shmos of the Krinsky edition, but you don't have it in the Mikros Gedolos. The one that you have in the Mikros Gedolos, the Shmos, is the Perush Ha'aroch. Open it up. Open up Ibn Ezra to Bereishis, and you see most Ibn Ezra pages are a few lines. Open up Shmos, Ibn Ezra is sometimes half the page. He's much more verbose in Shmos. Okay, and he sometimes contradicts himself between the first book, the four books in Shmos. like on the pasuk Bi Adoni in Vayigash, he says in the pasuk Shlach Nabi Atishlach Bi Adoni Shlach Hashem Shlach Nabi Atishlach, he says I'll explain there what Bi means. And you look in Shmos, it's not there, but you look in the short Perush and it's there, because the Bereishis and the Shmos and Yom Kippur's Gedolos are not the same Perush. According to Margolios, they were written 40 years apart, and he changed so much. So many of his attitudes changed between the first parish and the second parish. He met with Rashbam in between, in London, Rashbam's parish in between, and he had various changes in his approach to the Karaites. If you look at some of the ways he speaks about Karaites in the short parish, anytime he mentions a Karaite, immediately he pokes fun at the person's name and talks about it. Chiviya Balchi is Chiviya Kalbi, or Yitzchak is Tzochekalov, or whatever the guy's name is, he pokes fun at. In Shmos, in Yomikros Gedolos, he sometimes quotes Karaites and gives them full expression as a Parshan. To the extent that very often we only know so much about Yefet Ben Eli because of Ibn Ezra. Not for Ibn Ezra, you wouldn't know of. And so many times in this parish, especially in the Nevi'im, he takes something Rashi says and quotes it in the name of Yefet Ben Eli. Surely Yefet Ben Eli said it, but say it in the name of Rashi. That only proves, really, what I should have said in the very beginning. Ibn Ezra is probably the only Jewish Parshan in the last 900 years who wrote his parish to Torah without looking at Rashi at the same time. So often, especially in Sefer Shmos, just because he's more verbose there, he quotes Rashi but just says, without saying this is Rashi. Or he just quotes a Rabbi Yeshua very often, it's Rashi. Because he didn't know that Rashi said it. No one wrote just plain Rashi. Chizkuni, Bechoshor, Rashbam, they didn't write. Whatever Rashi said, I left alone, unless I disagree. I don't write the same thing as Rashi, no one does that. And if they do, they'll quote Rashi. Ibn Ezra just very often does. Like if you see in Maseches Tainis, Tosfos very often says the same thing as Rashi, and never in Maseches Tainis does Tosfos say Perush HaKuntres, which made the Achronim, notably the first one to do it, the Gemara Tzchayos, and no one took so long to say that Rashi, Maseches Tainis, is not Rashi. Okay, so too, it is Rashi. Only Ibn Ezra was writing his Perush without having Rashi in front of him. It's inconceivable that Tosfos writes a Perush without having Perush Rashi in front of him. Alright.
He didn't have Rashi in front of him, so he's quoting from where?
Just
from memory?
No. He never quotes Rashi. No, he didn't have a parish of Rashi to Maseches Tainis when the Bali Tosfos wrote.
No, I'm saying about
the... And the parish that we have in Maseches Tainis under Rashi is a later parish.
Yeah, I understand about the answer of quoting Rashi without saying it's Rashi.
He coincidentally, he didn't care for Rashi. Of course, right. Right, he knew. I mean, he writes about Rashi and stuff a brewer, but he didn't care. Alright? Okay. Let me ask you, after we finish with the Ramban, I want to unravel to you a fundamental, I say unravel, but I want to show you a fundamental difference that Rashbam ibn Ezra and Rashi and Ramban had to the Kedusha of the biblical text to say what they did. Ibn Ezra and Rashbam felt that they were giving more kedusha to the text than Rashi was, in a way, and I'll show you how. All right, that Rashi's reading things closely. I want to show you how Ibn Ezra and Rashbam can argue adaraba, I'm doing better than Rashi. All right, I'll try to show that, and then Ramban can look at all of them and say I'm doing the best. All right, yes.
What happened to the long
perish to the others? We don't have it. We don't have it. I'd love, but, you know, it would be wonderful if we can have it. We don't have it. Even Dr. Lyman doesn't have it.
Where did Rashbam live?
I'm sorry? In northern France. Northern France, yes.
And Ibn Ezra
never lived in one place for too long. Yes. No. Simply because in Perush Shmos he writes, see what I wrote in Devarim, and it's so different than Devarim. He must have in some Devarim written something like that. It really happens often that in Shmos he contradicts himself in the other four books. It happens so often that in Shmos he contradicts himself in the other Shmos. In the Perush HaKatzar, he writes, you know, there's someone, I heard some people say that tefillin is this and this pshat and tefillin, that we'll do next week. And he says, that's osur, oy vey, it's like a Christian, he's like a Christian perush of the tefillin. And in the long perush, he said that. So we'll take.
Rambam says that the reason he did it is the one way he gives the traditional pshat on tefillin is when he's fighting the karoyim, and the one way he says, which it's a symbol, and all he's talking to his own people, is that you can do
okay.
This. He was worried about what the karoyim would use again. That's the
whole
thing.
Good. The reason why I brought this down here is because the way that Ibn Ezra says they got the Ate Shittim in the desert, in the first Perush Katsar, he writes, Yesh Amrim Shemei HaMidbar Khartoum. Some say that they cut the Ate Shittim in the desert. I think they took it out, they took out the trees with them from Egypt. And in the long parish, if you turn the page, he says, Yesh mikad monenu, see it, shmot kapeh hei parish of Ruf. This is what you'll find in your Mikros Gedolot. Yesh mikad monenu shamrushi Yaakov avinu ta'am, Yisrael otziyu. Some say that Yaakov planted them, that's Rashi. But Yisrael otziyu in Mitzrayim and Mitzvah Moshe. And others say that they it could be any cheese that's pasteurized. Is it good? Changed around the chemicals or how about jello? That the bones were changed around so much that any jello is kosher. So you have all these shittas, and we don't hold from them. But I can collect for you all the shittas that we've shown them and show you that you're not even keeping Shabbos. Or you can keep all one Rishon, the Ran here, a Rosh here, Rashba here, Rambo here, and you're not keeping Shabbos because you can't believe all the kulos if you took. You wrote a new Shulchan Aruch with every kula of every Rishon. Of course, Shulchan Aruch didn't do the kulas. He went after Rabbim Lahatos, right? But even when you go after the Rabbim, there are going to be some problems. We pass them like the Yachid sometimes also. But so that's certainly you can collect that one shita that it wasn't how we passed in Halacha. The Rambam passed into all the Pesukim written by Moshe. All right, but even the Rambam said that the last 8 Pesukim. Be'otzar es hashamayim. Pashup shat, what does it mean? Lorein, the Gemara says it can't mean that because the pasuk continues, lo yeh matar. So what does be'otzar es hashamayim mean? There will be no clouds. What does yitamu chatoim in ha'aretz, and look carefully. It's important just to review the Rashbam from last week. Remember that whenever he mentioned that I'm going to give a pshat that will fly in the face of Rashi and Chazal, he always mentioned that this is just pshat. There are 69 other ways to read this pasuk. And I'm just trying to tell you, in mikra yotzei midei pshuto. Don't forget the pshat. Rashbam on a number of occasions points out that the main way of approaching the pesukim of the Torah is through the Yudgin Amidos of Rabbi Yishmael, the Lamed Beis Midos of Rabbi Eliezer ben Yosef Yosef Glili. Don't forget Pshat. The Ramban proves this through the Lashon of the Maimer itself. Ein Mikra Yotzei Midei Pshuto wants to tell you what? What does it want to tell you? What does it mean?
That the Rashi is valid, and then the Iker. While you're learning the drash, you shouldn't forget the
Torah. The Ramban says this in his introduction to the Torah. It's not in mikra ela kipshuto, or hamikra tzara leforish kipshuto. In mikra yotzei midei pshuto. Don't forget that there is also a pshat. Because until Rashi, most of the mafarshim forgot that. And 2,500 pages of Gemara, the mimer only appears 3 times. Twice in Yavamos and once in the Sefer Shabbos. Let's see what even kosher animal wasn't shechted properly. It could be any cheese that's pasteurized. Is it changed around the chemicals or how about jello? That the bones were changed around so much that any jello is kosher. So you have all these shittas and we don't hold from them. But I can collect for you all the shittas that we've shown them and show you that you're not even keeping Shabbos. you can keep all one Rishon, Ran here, Rosh here, Rashba here, Rambam here, and you're not keeping Shabbos, because you can't believe all the kulos if you wrote a new Shulchan Aruch with every kula of every Rishon. Of course, Shulchan Aruch didn't do the kulos, he went after Rabbim Lahakos. Right? But even when you go after the Rabbim, there are going to be some problems. You can pass like the Yachid sometimes also. But so that's certainly you can collect that one sheet that it wasn't how we passed in Halacha. The Rambam passed into all the Psukim written by Moshe. All right, but even the Rambam said that the last 8 Psukim. The Otsar es Hashamayim. Pashup Shat, what does it mean? Barain, the Gemara says it can't mean that because the pasuk continues v'lo yiyem atar. So what does v'atzar es hashamayim mean? There will be no clouds. What does yitamu chatoim in ha'aret? And look carefully about zmiras on the tshuva on one of the most beautiful of all zmiras, Tzama Nafshi Lelokim, which is written by Ibn Ezra. On that, the Chasam Sofer says that this could have only been written by a navi. Ibn Ezra, although a great titan. And I'm not only doing Perish Al HaTorah here, in his Perish to Koheles, Perek He, take a look at any Mikros Gedolos, it's all I have is one pasuk and the whole page is Ibn Ezra. He goes on a tirade against Piyut. He was so much against davening with Piyut, and at the time of Ibn Ezra there was Piyut every Shabbos. I don't know what to do in this shul, but in my shul we're about to start a Dalet Parshias, and it's I don't like it. But we have one of those old shuls where they do all the piyutim, and it takes a half hour of chakras and Parshas Shkolim and Musaf too. Ibn Ezra is so much against it. Rashi sort of set the trend.